We have a lot to get
intelligence
into.
Intelligence is a detriment in this field.
U of H is into the Sweet 16. The Texans have finally signed an offensive lineman. Rob Gronkowski, the greatest tight end of all time, has called it quits. He will retire. We will get into all of those. Let's begin with Justin Verlander, who gets an extension over the weekend, 2 years, $66
million. 2 years, $33 million per year, making him the highest paid dude on a per year basis, right?
Pitching, yes.
Over those, the highest paid pitcher over those 2 years. This makes complete and total and perfect sense. And I'm actually giddy over the fact that it's just a 2 year deal. That this is something that Verlander, who's pitching as well as he's ever pitched, might have been able to hoodwink somebody into giving him a longer-term deal. Somebody like me. If I were the GM of a baseball team, I'd be like, you know what? Verlander's going to be good until he's 45 years old. Hell yeah, I'll give him a five-year deal. But the Astros are able to extend him, have him under control for this year plus two more years, and I fully anticipate him playing very, very well over those 2 years. Is there anything to be upset about with this? Zero,
well,
right?
My one concern is, are we 100% sure this will be a good deal because it's taking him through the age 38?
Yes! Okay, 100% no. Because, Mike, there is no 100% in baseball. You get Tommy Johns left and right these days. If anything, the fact that he's made it to this age, I really wonder, a 35-year-old who's, wait, 35?
Yeah, 30, yeah. I mean, he's 36 this year. This will be his age 36 season.
A 36-year-old who's been as healthy as Justin Verlander has been and who's pitching as well as he is right this moment, like, what are the odds of him having an injury, a major injury, versus your average 22-year-old that seems all but destined to get a Tommy John at some point? I feel just absolutely 100% brand spanking new fine about this. And part of it is just all the biometric data that the teams have these days and all their ability to analyze and predict who might get injured, who might not get injured. I would suspect that the Astros have a whole lot of analytics that say that Justin Verlander, aside from the clear evidence in the box score, that Justin Verlander is not your typical 36-year-old. And, yeah, I feel I can't predict that any player would be 100% healthy over the next 2 years, but I am 100% happy with this.
Same. You got the guy who I think is a huge part of what this Astros clubhouse is all about, which is, I think, a higher standard to the next two seasons after this one. And I mean, I think that the big thing for having Justin Verlander over these next three seasons is that you have clearly shown that you are financially committed to being the best team in baseball over that stretch, which I think you absolutely must make, because who knows how much longer you're going to be able to say that about yourself. And that's what I think bringing Justin Verlander back next season and the season after that does for you. I think it establishes that you will be among the top 3 to 5 teams in baseball over that stretch.
Well, because I agree with you when you say, okay, who knows how long you have this window, whatever. But the tricky thing is always, all right, are you going to extend yourself beyond where you should, like with a Pujols type contract? And that's why the 2 years of this is the best part of it all. I would have loved if they had signed him for $40 million a year for just 2 years. Then I would have been just fine, because moving forward, you don't have to worry about paying Verlander. Even though I'm confident he's going to pitch well into his 40s, you don't have to worry about paying that guy for 3 years after he's done playing baseball. So for all intents and purposes, done when he's not effective anymore.
Yes.
So this is just, Mike, you asked, are we 100% sure? Is it a good deal? Yes, I'm 100% sure it's a good deal. That means even if it doesn't work out, even if you got hurt next year or something, I think when you analyze all the risk factors and his current performance and all of that, that it's a good deal. I'm 100% confident with that.
For me, the most important part about this Verlander extension is that, as Paul mentioned, it kind of extends your World Series window. That's the most important part, because the pitching staff is the one area of the team that had the most uncertainty moving forward, in that, you know, the hitters, you know that you're going to have these guys at least for a little while. Springer for the next two, Bregman, Altuve locked up. You know, Correa is here for the next 3 years. So you have the backbone of what's going to be a good offense. But from a pitching staff standpoint, you know, Cole is still an uncertainty, right? You have Lance coming back next season, but he's got to be able to stay healthy. And you've got, you know, free agents with McHugh and Peacock and Forrest Whitley still not here and still not proven. So this was the one area of the Astros that was the most uncertain. And now it gives you the most kind of stability in this World Series window.
Right. And this has been a steady 3-year march towards, hey, no more concerns whatsoever about whether Crane's willing to spend money. Like, this is, and Reddick was really probably your first indication that, hell no, they're not worried about spending money. But this is the biggest marquee player. I'm not like you two. I don't worry about the two-year window nearly as much because you just extended Alex Bregman. Jose Altuve is going to be fine for a long time. Who knows what the hell happens with Correa, but if he stays healthy and he can establish something, I think they're going to be able to retain guys. I would say this. I think I'm just much more optimistic in general about the ability of teams, good teams in baseball, being able to maintain a certain level because free agency is finding its level. Like, the huge, exorbitant, ridiculous contracts have gone by the wayside. Now you've got teams extending players. There have been more extensions right now, preseason extensions, this season than there had been, like, in the last two seasons combined. Teams and players are just starting to kind of figure it out. So I don't worry as much about an inability to retain guys like Alex Bregman because you just did it. I think that this window is as long as Jeff Luhnow knows what the hell he's doing.
I'm actually surprised that this went down. Like, if you had told me last week that the Astros were going to lock down Verlander for even a short-term contract.
No matter how many times I told you it was the smart thing to do.
Not even against you. It's more just like I wasn't sure if Verlander was going to be, you know, willing to talk at this point.
Oh, yeah. Why was that, by the way? When I said that it really felt like Justin Verlander would just want to stay in the same spot if it's possible, like with the right money,
yes.
You kind of scoffed at it. You looked at me and you scoffed.
Did I scoff?
Yeah, you gave that arrogant elitist look you have.
Did I?
Yeah. I was like, you know what? Verlander, and you know what? It angers me. It angers me. Because you and John McClain both, you're so damn cynical and jaded that anytime I, a former athlete, tell yes. you guys, you know what? Sticking around in the same place does actually matter to some guys. Like, and especially once you get married and Verlander doesn't have any. Does he have a kid on the way? I don't think
he has one kid that was just born.
That's right. Oh, that's right. He has a kid on the way. And once you start establishing that kind of roots in a place, you don't want to leave. And you guys look at me like, it's all about the money. And that's McClain. And then you'll say, like, well, actually, if we look at the analyst statistics of it, it's generally the higher pay.
Nerds.
So I sit here and I say, like, it seems like Verlander, who spent the vast majority of his career at Detroit and then came here and won a World Series and is just the absolute backbone of that team in terms of leadership and teaching young guys how to play the game, that it seems like you want to stick around.
Well,
and you scoffed. And then 24 hours later, Verlander was extended.
Well, to make it clear, as we're discussing the new deal that Justin Verlander got from the Astros, 2 years and $66 million. If I gave that impression, that was not what I intended to do. My thought was more just that, okay, Verlander will be tougher to negotiate with than probably anybody that they've had to negotiate with, because he's such a big-time player. He's a future Hall of Famer. And he even said in his comments afterwards that, like, hey, setting the average annual value record for pitchers was a really important thing for me.
Yeah.
And he made it seem, and I don't know how much this is true. I'm not calling him a liar, but he said that, like, making sure he got this money at this age was important for him, not just for himself, but for baseball players in general. And so I just felt like this would be not an easy negotiation. Whereas with Bregman, you could throw out a big number where he's never really made a fortune in his life. Whereas Justin Verlander, even before this, already made $200 million.
But Verlander is still pitching like the best pitcher in baseball. And I don't think there's any reason for him to stop pitching like that. I think more of a question mark is, okay, well, what happens with Gerrit Cole? And by reports, at least that we saw over the weekend, it doesn't seem like the Astros are anywhere close to a deal with Gerrit Cole. Now, that could change because, honestly, it seems like with the Astros, they had a checklist and they're like, all right, Bregman, done. Justin Verlander, done. Gerrit Cole would be the next logical piece, I would think. But go back to, I guess, Richard Justice and his visit on the Triple Threat, and he was notably very high on the importance of, first off, George Springer in this clubhouse, and on top of that, Justin Verlander in this clubhouse, and just how it sort of changed the mindset of the actual Astros clubhouse. So to me, this was a no-brainer, even though you are making a guy that's in his late 30s the highest paid pitcher in baseball. Because I have no reason to believe that he will fall off unless he gets hit by a car or something.
So as far as how Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander are kind of intertwined, I believe him when he says that it was important for him to set the highest average per year for a pitcher, because he's been one of Verlander's been one of the most outspoken in terms of, okay, something's broken with the system. What the hell's going on here?
Yes.
We're headed for trouble with the CBA. And part of that kind of finding out where free agency actually is now is teams get so much more analytically driven and computer model driven when it comes to paying players is, I think it's going to be, you, average per year will keep going up. You know, like at the top end, Verlander, very, very high record-setting contract in terms of average per year. Mike Trout, high average per year. But the terms are going to come shorter. Just like, you know, the 10-year contract for a 30-year-old, obviously, those days are long gone. But the salary, so that's what it is with Cole right now, is Cole, as a pitcher especially, how much is he going to get paid, you know, for how long? I think the average per year is going to be really nice. It's going to be probably shorter than you would have thought a couple years ago.
Meanwhile, the Texans this weekend finally did something that they have not done all offseason. They signed an offensive lineman, Matt Khalil, formerly of the Panthers and the Minnesota Vikings. Do you guys like this move?
I like it because it's a
body. I don't like it for anything having to do with Matt Khalil. Am I supposed to say Khalil? Everybody says Khalil, and it just looks like Khalil, and I'm going to say Khalil.
Okay.
This is a guy who made the Pro Bowl as a rookie at Minnesota, and then yes. It's been a steady, slow progression towards the depths of hell ever since. He's been largely a disappointment. People in Carolina couldn't figure out why he got a $55 million contract. He never lived up to it, except for a few spare games here and there. But that's not our problem here in Houston anymore. Like, Houston didn't give him a $55 million contract. So the question simply becomes, is he better than Julion Davenport? You could make the argument that maybe he is, but he was also playing in Carolina, and Cam Newton makes offensive linemen look a lot better yeah. than they actually are in Carolina. He's been banged up and injured all to hell, as has Chantrell Henderson, the right tackle. So it makes me feel a little bit better because at least they've got options there at offensive tackle in a genuine competition. I don't think this one bit changes their desperation for a long-term tackle, though. They don't have any long-term solutions right this moment on the team.
And it shouldn't do that. Wade Smith, former Texans offensive lineman, former Texans Pro Bowl guard, wrote a piece for SportsRadio610.com after watching a little bit of Matt Khalil. And Seth, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I think the real conclusion that I came away from reading Wade's piece is that, okay, yeah, you're bringing in a guy, you're hoping that it's something like Chantrell Henderson can turn into gold. But it sounds like this is a guy that very rarely plays with a chip on his shoulder. And I'm curious, you know, having gone up against offensive linemen, how important that is.
Well, it's important, I guess, but you just either have that or you don't, whether you're injured or you're not. And I think Khalil, a lot of the problem is he just doesn't move as well as he did before he had his injuries. So that's just where I don't, you know, in 2016, he played two games. Then he played a full season in 2017. And then he missed all of 2018. So I look back to when he was a young player who was at USC. I think he probably had enough of a chip on his shoulder, but it's kind of like, all right, try to shoot this wild boar with a 22. It's dicey, and that's what he's trying to do right now. He might have a huge chip on his shoulder, but he just doesn't have the weaponry to do it physically, and that's what I would worry about. Like, Breno Giacomini had a chip on his shoulder. He was awful.
Yes.
It didn't matter.
Wasn't it a post-play chip on his shoulder?
Well, I think he genuinely, like, Reno Giacomini genuinely wanted to damage people. He just didn't have the physical ability to do it anymore. Matt Khalil probably has less of a chip on his shoulder, but it wouldn't matter even if he had that chip, because it would, like, the chip would remain untouched and in virgin shape, because it wouldn't get jostled
undipped
by anybody.
Salsa.
Yeah, he would keep it pristine on his shoulder.